From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 5th day of March, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will be here from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. And if you can stay with us, you'll hear a portion of Commodity Week. Otherwise, that program is up on our website already at WILLAG.org. Our panelists for the week included Del Durkles, Dave Chatterton, and Bill Biederman.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn at $5.45 a bushel on its settlement price for a Friday, up 13 cents. July at $5.34, 11.5 higher. In December contract at $4.81, up 6. Soybeans, May contract 19.5 higher at $14.30. The July at $14.13¾, up 18¾. In November, $12.47¼, up 16¾¢. Bean meal, up $1.60 at $4.18.20, and the bean oil for the day at $51.80, $1.09 higher. Wheat futures are two higher at $6.53 at the end of the day. The hard red at $6.26¼, up $0.05¼. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished 47.5 higher. Feeders were up 52.5, and hogs were down 12.5¢. Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas, is now here to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day and the week both. Boy, it's been interesting. And I have thought, Mike, that the market was, you know, bumping along the top end, and it keeps trying to run through it. Can you tell me about what you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, two things. I really do think that what you just said, Todd, can't be understated as far as we are hitting some headwinds. I mean, there's just no way around it as we get up to these higher price levels, especially in the front-end futures market. But we noticed that the front-end futures market for both corn and beans were able to once again close higher than last week's close. And in the case of Dease Corn, that gave us a new contract high on Friday, and we're getting up there close to that 1452 in a shade area in November beans once again. So headwinds, because we're needing to feed the bull, and that feeding of the bull is really getting, I think, pushed in a strong direction this past week because of the weather in South America. There's another reason I'll go into in a minute, but the weather in South America is really the supply-demand driver to, I think, why we were able to hold on to these gains given what was going on in the outside markets, like the dollar strength, the Chinese currency weakness, and the equities markets falling apart for 3 days in a row. But now that puts more, I think, pressure on the bull, and the bull needs to be fed, as they would say, as we go to Tuesday's WASDE report. And I think the best way the bull could be fed is to see the South American crop dropped. I don't care if it's Brazil or Argentina, just cut the production number in one of those two countries for both corn and beans. And then that justifies what we got done doing this week. Second thing, real briefly, is the crude oil market. I wrote to clients last night about this, and hopefully there'll be something that we can do together that you and I are kicking around, and I'll leave a little tease out there. But there's a lot of talk about a commodity super cycle right now, and to me, I just don't see it in the works or in the making yet, because the OPEC decision to keep their supply output reduced was what shot the, between today's, Friday's price action and Thursday's price action, shot the crude oil up almost 9% just in those 2 days. That's supply driven. South American weather is supply driven. A dollar breaking up and almost breaking into a monthly buy signal, that's not inflation. And so I don't see the commodity super cycle demand led market that many are writing about right now.
On that note, Mike, I think of crude oil as the master price setter for all commodities, just putting them in caloric or protein or energy value. So corn is protein, is energy, right? And I'm wondering whether it behooves those that are selling and producing the crude oil side to make sure that the market is flush, simply because it's harder to bring in other energy sources if that's the case.
Yes, I think energy policy is number one. And then the fragility of the supply chain because of the pandemic. And that fragility is still very much in play. There are widespread inventory issues, whether you're talking microchips or you're talking copper. I mean, steel is a very big exception. Steel is in the deep dive right now in terms of prices because of oversupply. But the supply chain is also something that really, in my opinion, makes it appear that the demand is extremely good because the inventories are low. But there's another reason. And to your point about the energies, it's not just about the calories, where you can count everything in terms of caloric energy, and starting with crude oil, which is priced in U.S. dollars, it goes back to, because it's priced in U.S. dollars, and about 60 or 70% of all invoices that are commodity invoices sent out through the worldwide commodity companies are dollar-based. You have to keep track of how the dollar and the crude oil trade with one another, and they are still running at a very strong correlation of negative. They're not as negative as they were, but they're still very, very strong, very, very weak in terms of correlation. Now, what we've seen in the last 2 weeks has been a reversal of that, where the crude's gone up and the dollar's gone up. That is not a good sign for commodities, typically or historically.
So quick question then, and we talk about some of this in Commodity Week today as it relates to inflation. The bull market needs to be fed. Part of its supply side, that's out of South America. Part of it is demand side, that's the world export market. And then there's part of it that is inflationary potential. So there are three things, all three of which could go away pretty quickly, but they all have to be fed by the bull.
Yeah, it's a chicken and the egg. And what I would say is it's a cost push inflation that we're talking about, since it's mainly supply driven. I mean, even China's loss of hog herd, that was a supply driven driver. That's what created demand, the loss of South American crop, the loss of Chinese crop, the potential loss of our hard red wheat crop. You know, we're going to see Western Kansas hit 80 degrees. Those guys are breaking dormancy. And I've got forecasts next Tuesday, next Wednesday of lows of 26 degrees. So they haven't even figured out how bad the last really hard freeze was. They may have yet another hard freeze in the middle of breaking dormancy. And I think these are the things that the trade's just not looking at right now because of the outside markets, because of South America. But it may be a very prominent player next week. But again, it's cost push. It's almost like the 70s and 80s type inflation we dealt with here in this country. And what I'm getting to is it still takes your prices higher. It's just not a smooth price move, and the trend is not your friend overall, and it makes it very difficult to hedge. And you should be hedging, because those higher prices against wages not going up and other demand-led fundamentals and higher energy prices that we're now seeing, these are things that will work against higher commodity prices down the road.
Right. So go ahead and hedge, in your opinion, because if that inflation is there, you're going to need the cash in the bank.
Exactly right. I asked a producer this week. He said, I've still got about 20% of my old crop beans left, or he maybe even had 80%. I can't remember what he said, and I said, well, you know, John, when's the last time you sold $14 beans? And he said, I don't think I ever have. And I said, well, there's your answer. I mean, that's why I scale up sales, because these are prices too good to pass up. And in my opinion, if you do this every time it gets to this price, I think you'll have a pretty good farm average.
Yeah. Would you be happy today if you sold it? Right. That's kind of the question. Not will you be happy if it goes against you. It's are you happy today?
Yes, exactly. Unfortunately, that's how we think. But it goes back to what you and I have talked about a lot. Can you sell it on the way down? Can you not prevent yourself from getting locked up if you see a 40-cent down day? Well, I had some of those calls this week as well, and we were down hard after a very strong move up on Thursday. That was not a good day for the guys that were holding a lot of grain.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Yep, that's Mike Zuzalo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. It's Friday. Let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass this afternoon. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the weather. It's been really nice. It's just beautiful. It's great weather to get out and do a few things. Will we maintain this?
You know, it's the reminder that it's still March 1st, right? So, I mean, we've got this beautiful weather that's come in. The jet stream has split. Big piece went to Canada. The other piece went to Mexico. And that leaves a donut hole in the middle in which we are currently living. And it's beautiful, right? I mean, these temperatures getting up into the 50s and maybe cracking 60 next week has got a lot of us just thinking, all right, is this going to get everything going quickly? But, you know, I hate to say it, but these great things do come to an end at some point, and we do see the pattern kind of collapsing back into a more unified jet stream pattern, no longer split, but instead targeting, you know, Southern California all the way to the mid-Atlantic. And so we're going to go back over to a pretty active time period once we get into next week.
Well, it is the season of change, I suppose.
Yeah, it certainly is. And there's two things I'm really thinking about there is one, you know, when we get out of winter, our immediate next thought is about severe weather. And two, the questions start to come in. All right, are we going to be able to get this fast plant going? Are we going to have warm early conditions? Or is it going to be wet and cool? And I think those are going to be the questions you and I are going to talk about for probably the next month and a half, right?
Yeah. So what about the severe weather outlook?
Yeah, I'm anxious to talk about that, as you can tell. You know, we've been putting together some of our analog forecasts. Again, analog just means we go back and look historically at things that kind of correlate well with this year. And given we do have this fading La Nina, we still have quite a bit of warmth in the North Pacific and the North Atlantic. I think we're going to have a relatively weak polar branch of the jet stream, but a more powerful subtropical branch at times. Now, the translation there is that this is a year where I have a more elevated risk of severe weather from the mid-south through the Midwest through the Ohio River Valley compared to any normal year. And I think we're just going to get going with it pretty quickly. And my colleague, Andrew Pritchard, who you can, of course, also hear on WILL, the two of us have put our heads together for the last month and come up with some ideas that just think it's going to be more elevated here across our part of the world.
Does that mean we get cooler weather periodically that rams into warm air?
Yeah. Basically what that means is, welcome to Illinois. You're sitting right on the boundary, you know, and it's just going to be one of those things where we will have a lot of transition throughout our spring temperature pattern, I think. I do believe that, unfortunately, this particular pattern, while it doesn't close the planting windows based on cold weather, I think it's going to close the planting windows based on more precipitation. At least that's some of the early guidance we're getting, not only from the analogs, but also the models.
Do we have any new long-range data that we can discuss?
Yeah, just this morning. So I've been sitting here staring at it, trying to make sense of it. And, you know, we do value the long-range models. They are, while they may not exhibit a lot of skill, sometimes they're accurate. Now, the difference is, you know, I could stand on my head and throw a dart at a dartboard and hit the bullseye, and that's accuracy, right? But can I do it every time? That's skill. So when we start to see some consistency month to month with these forecasts, it increases our, well, maybe the level at which we think they're going to have an idea. So long story short, they keep taking the heat west, and they keep taking the dryness west, where there already is widespread drought, and taking it away from Illinois. Now, I've been concerned all winter with the fact that the ocean temperatures off the West Coast, the ocean temperatures off the Baja of California are cold, because that is a lot of times a pretty strong signal that we could be dealing with drought development at some point during the summer, or even flash drought. It's historically, statistically significant correlation. That's what we say, right? But the models just said, nope, take it all west. Take it to Montana. Take it to California. Take it to Washington. And I got to go here in about a half hour and talk to folks in Montana and tell them that. I don't think they're going to be very happy with me. So, you know, the thought here is that if these models have this trend right, that's concerning. And here's another part. They're also, with this La Nina possibly making another resurgence late summer and into fall, that would also open the corridor back up for the Atlantic to be more active with tropical systems. So I feel like my plate's pretty full in trying to predict 2021, and I thought 2020 was a full plate, so here we go again.
Hey, speaking of here we go again, we need to go again to South America and get an update of what you think's happening there.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of reports lately of some troubles in Brazil with getting the crop out. You know, it went in late, it then got really, really rainy, and I've seen some videos that just boggle my mind where 8 inches plus have been fallen in parts of Mato Grosso in a single day. That shuts everything down, even there. And the beans that have been harvested, a lot of video coming in just showing, you know, just such high moisture, they're kind of getting caked in the trailers on the trucks. And then you look down south into, you know, Argentina, and now we're talking about regional drought issues that have really peeled back some of like the good to excellent rating on both corn and soybeans. So what we're all watching is that it looks as though the north is going to get a little drier in Brazil, and Argentina is favoring some wetter conditions, but not until after about March 11th or 12th. And the models keep pushing the wet weather west toward the Andes. And if it leaves, you know, Cordoba, Santa Fe, over to Buenos Aires dry, there are some places in there that will not measure rainfall going back to the beginning of February all the way through mid-March. So I think there is something to watch there carefully as we continue through these next 3 or 4 weeks.
Tanate, thanks so much, and good luck with the folks in Montana.
I hope they're kind to me when I tell them what I have to tell them, so we'll see.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to our content on demand anytime you'd like. You can do that from our website. Just click and play from willag.org or scroll down the page and you'll find some of your favorite podcast applications, places like Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast too. However you listen, thank you so much for taking your time and spending it with us here at Illinois Public Media. And on that website right now at willag.org, you'll also find some tools and information related to the crop insurance and other government programs, ARC PLC, that you'll be making decisions about by the 15th day of this month. Check it out right now at willag.org.